Do you remember when you rolled off base for the last time? At that time, did it hit you that your rank or title all stayed behind you at the gate? And out there, you became just another guy in traffic, trying to figure out how to pay the bills, be there for your family, and not feel like you went from hero to zero overnight. You might have even been told that the only way forward after the military was get a degree, get a job with a cubicle, and a career that maybe looks nothing like the life that once made you feel alive. Meanwhile, the trades that you were raised to overlook and are quietly paying six figures, and people in those jobs are doing pretty well. Today, retired Navy SEAL officer and business leader Marty Strong joins me to talk about a different path forward through Warrior Haven, USA, where veterans train in woodworking, metalwork, and culinary arts on a horse farm out in Florida. They get hands-on therapy with horses and dogs and learn from people who have already walked a mile in their shoes. Sometimes we need some humility when we're starting over at the bottom, and this episode we'll talk about why blue-collar skills and smart apprenticeship might be the fastest way back to a sense of purpose, good income, and some confidence after taking the uniform off. Before we begin, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will be both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Marty, welcome back to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Nice to be here, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been a little while since you've been on the show. We had you back on a couple of years ago, and things have kind of changed with you. You've kind of moved into a new role with Warriors Haven USA, and wanted to get you back on to talk about what you guys are doing with Warriors Haven USA and kind of share some of that mission. So, you know, hopefully folks have listened to that episode already and know a little bit about you, but if not, well, I'll have a link to that episode in the show notes. They can go check that episode out and kind of listen to our first episode. But tell us a little bit about your role with Warriors Haven USA. What kind of got you into taking this role, and what's the organization all about?
So it was the brainchild of the co-founder, Pete Gary, who was in the Marine Corps, Force Recon Marines, for 8 years. And we've been friends for 35 years and never worked together, just been really close friends. Even if we lived in different states, we were always in touch, you know, on a regular basis. So he went to culinary school for a couple of years, Culinary Academy, decided his first job in a major restaurant, decided he didn't like it. And so we went off and decided to sell cars while he was figuring out what he wants to do. And he ended up becoming a fantastic car salesman, ended up managing not one, but as many as three or four dealerships all at the same time, and was really good at marketing and advertising. So then he went on to create his own advertising company and did really well with that. So basically, serial entrepreneur, you know, high school graduate, Marine. And I called him up, I guess, I sent him an email in January of this year, said that I had just had a board meeting with the board that I've been working with private equity guys and everything for about 12 years. And I was managing multiple companies. Some of them were government contracting companies, and one of them was a healthcare company. And we had spun everything out by this time, except for the healthcare company. And I thought I was going to exit and go into semi-retirement for the two prior years in a row. And then something always happened that you know, I had to stick around for some reason. So this January, I called the board together and said, this is for real. Here's my succession plan. Here's my replacement. You know, I'm going to kind of slide slowly down the dinosaur tail incrementally over the first half of the year. And I'm an investor in the whole thing. So I said, I'll stay on the board if you want me to. If you don't, I'll just be a friendly advisor whenever you need, you know, I think you need any insight. Or if you don't, it won't hurt my feelings either. So then I sent out an email to about six or seven people and said, hey, this is what I'm looking for, kind of the unicorn request. I want to keep writing. I want to keep doing paid speaking. I want to do some coaching and mentoring, and I want to do something philanthropic. And I don't want to be at the board level, if at all possible, because I've been on lots of charity boards, some large ones too. And the next morning, I get this call from Pete, and he says, brother, you got to get your butt down to Florida. I need to talk to you. I've had this thing I've been putting together all of 2024, and I think everything you said you wanted in that email, I think we can do that. So I went down, and after about four or five trips, my wife said, yeah, okay, I'm good with going to Florida. So we moved from Virginia Beach to Florida about 2.5 months ago. But I'd been coming down here almost every month for 4 or 5 or 6 days. And what we were doing is accelerating the development of a veterans foundation that it may not be unique in every way, but we thought that it served an underserved niche, which is blue collar training, basically training to the trades and preparing veterans in a lot of different ways, psychologically. That right now, the person you see driving down the road in the $100,000 car or, you know, $120,000 SUV, there's a higher likelihood that it's a plumber or an electrician than it is somebody from Wall Street.
Right.
And that's completely missed on society because of culture. Culture always has the working person, and the trades is always kind of the backdrop person. And the white collar guys are the guys that are, you know, all the drama, making all the money and driving all the cool cars and having the yachts and all that. And anybody that's listening to this will say, yeah, it's really hard to get one of those people. It's hard to get a good carpenter. It's hard to get a good, any fill in the blank. That's because they're in great demand because there's fewer and fewer of them. And therefore they demand whatever they want to get paid. And they live very, very well. And it's going to be like that for a very long time unless this country kind of switches gears on the vocational side and tries to train a whole new generation of talented workers. So we looked around, and Pete did most of this work in the beginning, and we couldn't find a whole lot of effort in the whole veteran philanthropic landscape. And so we sat there and said, what do we want to be? Well, we want to be niche. We want to be focused because those are the organizations that really have high impact. We don't want to be kind of the United Way of veterans groups where we say we can do anything and everything under the banner of being, you know, helpful to veterans. We, through the research, we said the niche we want to do is vocational training. And we have some sidecars. You know, if anybody goes to the, you know, warriorshavenusa.com website, you'll see the program. So we have a business academy. It's virtual right now, but we have people enrolled in it, and we help them whatever stage of business development they are. If they're thinking about creating a business, we help them with those early thoughts, strategic planning. If they're looking for money, we help them, you know, learn how to find funding, how to present things to a bank or other types of investors. If they're further on and they're having difficulty with scaling, or they're having difficulty with management or leadership issues, or even a strategy for the next iteration of their company's lifespan, we help them with that. And that's through lots of other volunteers, lots of smart people that have been in business for many, many years, and they are going to talk to them, you know, very, very straight. It's not lecturing. It's not academic in any way, shape, or form. Sometimes it's a little brutal. I sat in on one a week ago, and it was about looking for capital, and it was all scared straight stuff. It was like, and the person that was talking had been in the business of building funding for companies at different stages for 20 years. The veteran that was listening had pitched to 21 venture capitalists already. That's what people need. That's what all people need, is some candor. And so that's the business academy. And then we have the three types of vocational training that we do, which is anything to do with woodworking, carpentry, things like that, metalworking, and then culinary. So culinary arts. So those three have three different levels of engagement. And I can talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
And it's all being conducted on a horse farm just outside of West Palm Beach, Florida. So we have a 1,200 square foot facility now, and we've been training veterans in there, mostly in woodworking. There's horses on the farm, so we've done equine therapy. We've got a partner called Semper Fi Canine in Delray Beach, Florida, and they will come in with their canines, and they basically just it's a level one is just a day. It's just an experience. There's no we're not trying to turn them into polo players with the horses or you know using the dogs to find bombs on the second day of the program. But if they find that the veteran and the dog there's some synergy there that looks like they'd be a good candidate for a service dog. That particular organization also helps match veterans with service dogs and they train service dogs. So those two programs are not vocational per se, but they're part of what we offer. The business, the woodworking, the metalworking, and the culinary are our main kind of the four sections of the program.
Yeah. And I think that is definitely something that's necessary because I can't even tell you how many people I've spoken to who are transitioning out of the military. They maybe had, you know, whatever their MOS was, they don't want to do that on the civilian side, but they joined the military right out of high school and they don't really have any other training to do anything else. And so what's next for me? Where do I go from there? And then they're applying for jobs that they realize, oh, I don't have these qualifications or certifications, or I just have no experience in these different areas. And where do I get that from? And that's not always the easiest answer to get, depending on what the career field is. So having an organization like this that offers that type of training to folks who can use that to then go and turn around and get a job in whatever those areas are, or, you know, like you said, even the, you know, the animal, you know, therapies and service dogs and those types of things, that might just help somebody kind of get over the hump of whatever it is that they might be going through, because you know, everybody's a little bit different with the stuff that they come out of the military with. And that might just be the thing that they need to get them on the right track. And so you got a lot of programs going on, and you're absolutely right. As far as like the vocational jobs, you know, like all those things are definitely necessary. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've, you know, just at home here called for, you know, whether it's a plumber or electrician or, you know, someone like that to come out, and it's just, it's going to either take forever or it's going to be way more expensive than I thought it was going to be, because, you know, they're just in such high demand that, you know, supply and demand, that's where the money's going to go now. Right.
Yeah. We were validated about a month ago. We were putting the wiring in the 1200 square foot shop so we could put high speed microphones for recording in the ceilings. And the electrician that was working on it was wearing an $8,000 Rolex. So, yeah, enough said. We both me and Pete noticed that, and we're like, yeah. And that's the mythology of American culture. That's part of the problem. Like I found that I'm talking about this more and more, that the American dream, the way it was originally envisioned, was all about go make your way, find your way, experiment, try things. If it doesn't work, go to the next town, the next state, be very entrepreneurial, try multiple things, maybe have three or four different ways of earning a living. And that shifted in the 1940s and 50s to there's only one way. The American dream is get good grades, get into a good college, get good grades, get a good job, stay there forever, retire, right?
Right.
And so that's what's been touted by institutions and by the culture, reinforced by, you know, the media, movies, TV, and all that. And really, there's been an explosion. Probably the second explosion was probably after the 2008 financial crisis. Every time there's a financial crisis or depression or whatever in the United States, there's this huge explosion of cottage industries that become behemoth corporations within 10 years. You can trace them all the way back to, you know, the 5 years after the 29 crash, or the, you know, it just happens because people lose their jobs and they have maybe not ambition, but they're paranoid or they're afraid they're not going to be able to make ends meet. And so they take risks. And they try all kinds of crazy ideas. They leapfrog past the standard conventional, whatever their industry they were in, whatever the vocation was that they were practicing. And all of a sudden they burst through with this new thing. So I think that's the same thing we're seeing with the trades. There's, if anything, most of the guys I've talked to, they're having difficulty scaling because they are really good as that solo artist. Mm-hmm. But who's taught them how to manage five of them, you know, right. And then how much do you have to pay the other four? Right. And then how much business do you have to get on a regular basis to float that kind of a payroll? And why do we want to do that? I'll just stick with being a solo artist. And that's because there's just so much opportunity, so much demand, and so few, you know, on the supply side of the talented people that can do the work.
Well, and another thing that I've noticed too, in a lot of different fields, is that someone might be really good at whatever the industry is, whatever the job is. They might be a great carpenter. They might be a great electrician. They might be a great whatever, but they may not be so great at managing people and taking it out to that next level of maybe they're running their own business, and then they have the people under them who are going out and doing the work, going out to, you know, job sites or doing whatever it is that they do, but they struggle when it comes to the management side of things and stepping away from the day-to-day work of getting your hands dirty and doing all those kind of things. So sometimes you might be the best fill in the blank, whatever it is in your industry. But when you go outside of that and you end up now having to manage the people, that's where people kind of get stuck and they kind of feel like they're struggling a little bit. So having some sort of training in that is particularly important as well, because it's more than just how do I do this particular job. It's that next level too. How do I move up and advance? And, you know, like you said, how do I take a risk and venture out on my own to do this in as my own business? And, you know, now I got to manage people and I got to manage payroll. I got to manage all the things. As a business owner, you have a lot of plates to be spinning, you know, whether it's marketing, you know, HR, you know, all the things that you have to do that you have to take care of. And it really helps when you have a good team of people who definitely know their stuff in that their respective areas, whatever it happens to be. So that way you can kind of lean on them and say, okay, what is it that I need to do for this area or that area? And sure. those people can really help out. But, you know, sometimes getting started, the budget's a little thin and you need to be able to wear a lot of hats as that business owner. Right.
And quite frankly, not everybody's psychologically cut out or emotionally cut out to be a leader of an organization. They're actually great technicians. They're whatever they right. fill in the blank. I don't care if they're writing software or they're repairing jet engines, whatever there's a therapeutic and cathartic aspect to doing work with your hands,
yeah,
and creating or repairing. And unless you've done it, I mean, I'm not that guy. I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a woodworker or anything like that. I write books. That's creative, but it's not the same as spending hours and hours and hours trying to get a particular aspect of a piece of furniture that you've been building perfect, or a boat. I mean, there's a guy that I know, a SEAL, and he's been building this boat from scratch, and it's beautiful, and he must obviously have had some experience in doing that, but he's showing it in stages, right? I'd go nuts. I couldn't. I don't have the patience, you know, to... You know, I never even use clamps, right? Now I'm around this stuff all the time. I'm supposed to use clamps with the glue. I always put the glue in and fill up. This wood glue doesn't work. They lied. So, we aren't trying to persuade anybody to do any particular thing. We're trying to get them to open their eyes and open their minds a little bit to other possibilities. And, you know, so we've got the three levels. The first level is therapeutic. It's a one-day program. So I already mentioned the canine and the equine, but we also have one-day program for woodworking, metalworking, or culinary. Just, you know, kind of dip your toe in. Okay, that was interesting. That was kind of fun. But if it kind of strikes you that it's something you might want to get interested in doing more, level two is anywhere from a week to a month of training. This isn't an experience. This is training. It's not exposure and awareness. It's actual training. So, you know, if you want to learn how to run the 3D printer, we'll teach you how to run a 3D printer. You want to learn how to run a laser or, you know, a particular cutter or lathe or whatever it is, If you want to know how to make a knife, okay, that's the project. We'll teach you how to make. So you'll walk away with an actual skill, the ability to use certain kinds of tools, certain kinds of technology. And in the kitchen area, you'll learn kind of the basics of all the tools in the kitchen, the basics of all the machines that are in a modern kitchen in a restaurant, and also I'll call it the tactics of the kitchen. What's the workflow look like? You know, what's the normal workflow? What's the worst thing you can do? What's the standard operating procedure for the kitchen that's somewhat consistent? And you learn how to make at least one or two or three meals in that time frame that you want to make. You like Italian food, teach you how to make a bunch of Italian food. And if you walk away with nothing more than having a great experience and you know how to do some things you didn't do before, then that's the achievement we're looking for.
Sure.
Level 3 is an apprentice program. It's an onboarding to a paid apprentice position. So we started out just in the South Florida area, reaching out to corporations of all kinds. We've got 2 or 3 Michelin level restaurants that have already volunteered. And not only do they volunteer to take on the veteran that's gone through some kind of a 2 to 3 month block of training that we would provide them. So it'd beyond what I explained in level 2, they'd actually be able to come into a kitchen and contribute.
Okay.
They'd be able to come in like a true apprentice and start to contribute and start to be a positive impact in that environment. And they'd know which way, you know, the door swings and all that kind of stuff, which way is the pointy end of the knife. And depending on what restaurant is looking for somebody or willing to take that person, it may be actually tailored to that specific restaurant's game plan. So what they get is they get a veteran with all these great, you know, attributes. Shows up on time, very trainable, smart, great work ethic, probably can communicate really well, handle stress really, really well, works in teams really, really well. And they've got this other aspect. So at least they can do something when they get there. And then all of those veteran attributes just make them that much more powerful as they start to grow and learn. The same thing with, we've got Stanley Steamer of South Florida. So Stanley Steamer does a huge array of different trades involving what their businesses do. Much, much more than what somebody would think. They don't just clean carpets or something. They do all kinds of industrial and commercial type work, building, repairing, all kinds of different things. So they're standing by for people. If you know how to cut tin and create HVAC systems, if you know how to do basic electrical wiring, if you know how to do certain other tasks that they're looking for, they'll take you and they'll pay you and you'll be an apprentice and you'll be off and running. So that's kind of what the level 3 is. And even then, maybe somebody doesn't really want to work in that. They just are having a great time getting deeper and deeper into this thing. So, and that's fine too, because you can use all these skills in your home.
Right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, like I was saying earlier, I mean, all the time you're going to end up having, you know, homes are a money pit. So all the time you're going to end up having, you know, some sort of repairs that you need to do, whether it's, you know, electrical or plumbing or, you know, whatever it is. Your wife wants a new shelf in the kitchen or something like that. And you got to go figure out how to do that. And, you know, it's actually something I did myself. I brought that up just as an example, but there were so many scrap pieces of wood that I screwed up and threw across the garage as I was getting frustrated at it and kept trying. Eventually I figured it out and I got it all working and it came out looking okay. But, you know, had I had a little training and some skills and more than just the YouTube videos that I was watching, you know, I probably would have had a much easier time doing it. But, you know, that's definitely something that you can use just in your day-to-day life. Never mind, you know, making a career out of it.
Yeah. Knowing how to use the gear and having the gear. My wife and I did adventure racing and long distance racing for a long time and some kind of trail biking and things. And when we first started off in each one of those things, you know, we were the nerds. We showed up with, you know, clunky bikes or, you know, the wrong shoes, or we didn't have the cool high speed Camelback combination wraparound belt with all the places for all your electrolytes. And, you know, and we went out there and all these other people were, you know, we're prepared. We go, where'd you get that? How'd that happen? Or the special nav board that sits with a Velcro piece on your bike so that you can navigate while you're, you know. But by the, you know, the second or third year we did it, we had all the gee whiz stuff that mattered. And we were, you know, we were cooking with gas. It was great.
Yeah.
My problem, I think, is that I've never had somebody explain the tools. So I've never bought the tools. So I've never created like a shop-worthy garage, because I've watched Pete, whose his family was in construction in Rochester, New York. And he's a wizard with all this stuff. We've got at least $500,000 worth of tools and machinery right now. And he knows how to operate every single one of them. And he's just doing it like it's no big deal. So.
Well, and it's good too, to have somebody like that there who knows what's going on, knows how to use those things, especially that type of equipment. Knowing how to use it safely is definitely important, because you can definitely walk away with a few less fingers if you're doing something wrong. And yeah. So, you know, having someone there who, you know, whether he's doing the training or not is, you know, maybe not super important, but if there's somebody else there who's doing the training, he can at least know, does this person know what they're talking about? You know, so that way they are teaching the people the right way.
The other kind of overlay that we don't really talk about on any of our materials, the website, but it's going to be there. Pete and I were both enlisted guys. I did 10 years as an enlisted guy, then became an officer in the SEAL teams. So, you know, we can relate to a lot of the veterans. We've both become successful businessmen, and we don't have a perfect linear track record. So we can explain that too. You know, there's bumps and failures along the way, but that's part of the journey that veterans haven't seen up close and personal, unless they had parents that had that kind of a business experience. Mm-hmm. And part of this is to dispel I talked about the American dream. The other one is to dispel that if you don't have a college education, you can't get anywhere. The third one is that people who are successful are always successful. The success is linear. It's a progression of you know, wins. Right. And that can't be further from the truth. When I was managing money for United Bank of Switzerland, 60% of my high net worth clients were high school graduates. Half of them had blue collar type businesses. And I'd say at least half of them had all been bankrupt at least once.
Wow.
So, you know, it was like Stanley's Millionaire Next Door, you know, personified. And that's the reality. Again, not expressed in the culture, therefore, it has to be communicated and has to be a part of your overall kind of messaging. And then we're there all the time. So we'll be there to introduce the program. We'll be there for different talks at different points in time. We are networking with all kinds of other veterans groups that do things we don't. So, you know, organizations that actually will put a family up with the veteran in a hotel to go through a weeks long, you know, traumatic brain injury protocol. So, you know, the whole sleep program and then the whole mind brain mapping piece and all that. There are places around the country that are self-funded. They'll do that. So, you know, if that's what you're looking for, and you need that, we obviously aren't going to do that where we are, but we will then connect you kind of hand in glove and make sure that you get to the right people. Same thing with scholarships. A lot of the programs are giving out scholarships. The scholarships are to go to college to get, you know, a degree. Got it. Thousands of grants. Tens of thousands of grants across the country, state and federal grants for veterans. I'd say almost all of them, when you look at education, are checks to help you get tuition to go on that same path, right? That's sure. Why this particular aspect is kind of underserved. There's not a lot of I've been trying really hard to find a grant of any significance more than say $4,000 or $5,000 that says, you know, take this money and learn to have, you know, do a vocation that has something to do with other than a white collar degreed position.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, I think is sort of unique based on some of the conversations I've had with other veterans who've reached out to nonprofits, other organizations that claim that they're there to help the veterans, but they are very narrowly focused. They do this one particular thing. And if that's not the thing that you're looking for, sorry, there's a door. And that's kind of the message that they've been given. Whereas based on what you've been saying, you know, it's not that you necessarily are the jack of all trades, that you do everything and everything's in house with you guys, but you collaborate with other organizations. And if somebody is looking for something like a service dog, or you said like the TBI stuff or any of those other things, it only makes sense. If you have that connection and you can make that happen, why not help that person, you know, get involved with that? I mean, again, you're not going to be the one necessarily doing all of the stuff for them, but if you can make that connection and make that veteran's life that much better, you know, why wouldn't you do something like that? And that's something I think is missing in a lot of these organizations that serve veterans. And yes, it's absolutely great that they do what they do, but if that veteran doesn't fit into that particular category of whatever the service is that they're offering, it's almost a lot of times they feel like they're just left to fend for themselves and they don't even know where to turn. It's like, we already turned to this one place. Why can't I get more support? And this is exactly what we're looking for, you know?
So we're trying to set up an online, as part of our website, an online veteran networking mechanism. The important part for both me and Peter that we vet these organizations. We could put a ton of names up there and just check the box, but we're actually calling them. I talked to my third canine therapy type company this week. They're in Denver, and I've heard about them. So I said, okay, I'm gonna reach out to them, and they're really switched on. There's another one up in Virginia that's really switched on. There are a lot of them, and you probably only need a couple regionally, because then they know everybody else in the states adjacent to them. So that becomes its own networking kind of connection. And the other thing is, you talk to them. If you talk to them, they don't really want to be at the other end of a referral chain, or if they don't seem to really be interested, okay. You know, maybe they're overwhelmed. Maybe they, you know, a lot of times somebody will get one horse. Let's do equine therapy and 45 people line up. Oh, you know, I can't afford a second horse. You know, and I talked to somebody that ran into that problem. You call out and everybody shows up and you didn't think of it as a scaling operation. Right. So what we've got, we'll be breaking ground in the first quarter of 2026 on a 9,000 square foot, two-story vocational training center. So we'll keep the 1,200 square foot one we have now, and we're going to turn that into a kind of a video training environment, like a studio, but with all the different machines in the shop ready to go, so we can expand our media outreach and put clips in to explain what we're doing and bring in some, you know, celebrity or VIP people to come in and maybe teach something. But the main center, it's called the Harry Sargent Veterans Vocational Center, that's going to have a second floor that can lodge 18 veterans. They can stay there. There's rooms. And on that same second floor, there's a deck out in the back. And then on the front part of the building, there's a recreation room, there's a laundry room, there's a small kitchen, that's it. And then downstairs, we have a large conference room that may or may not be occupied with the business academy, or it may be where we give initial briefings, or maybe, you know, for any other use we can think of. And there's also going to be a fully modern TV studio. And then we're going to have the three main sections. One's going to be woodworking, one's going to be metalworking, and then the culinary. So three big shops with the capacity in the room to train anywhere from 8 to 10 veterans in each of them. Okay. And then there's a meditation center outside. So this is all laid out. The blueprint's all ready to go. We're starting to do fundraising on it. But so we're already thinking that if we do this right and we get the word out, we're gonna have a demand that comes in, and we want to be ready to scale up to that level.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's good that you guys are thinking that way too, to scale, because, you know, just like that guy with the one horse who has 45 people lining up and then thinking to himself, oh crap, now what do I do? You know, you don't want to be caught in that kind of situation where you feel like, well, either there's going to be a long wait list or I got to start turning people away. And that's not a great place to be in either. And so, you know, what you're doing now, kind of being proactive and getting those facilities set up, so that way you can take care of all these folks. And it's not an insignificant number of people either. Like that's a pretty good size, you know, group of people. And, you know, it's not like they're going to be there forever. You know, it's going to be another group of, you know, 8 to 10 people for each of those, you know, those three areas. So, you know, you're going to be able to take care of quite a few people in this. And so I think it's honestly, it's a great thing that's out there, because it's going to be able to take care of, you know, all sorts of needs that are out there for veterans. And, you know, I know there's probably going to be some veterans out there who are listening to this, who are saying like, all right, you know, shut up about this. And let's, you know, tell me, how do I get involved? How do I get out there? How do I do this? And, you know, how do I, you know, sign up? Where do I go? And so where do they go? What do they do to kind of get involved?
So they can go to our website, warriorshavenusa.com. There's a contact sheet on there, which comes straight to me. There's also a program, kind of a indication of interest, and you can pick one program or more than one program, and then that also comes straight to me. So that's one aspect of it. And you think you might be a good candidate for the program. The other one is volunteering to help. So, and you don't have to be a veteran to volunteer to help. If you are a patriotic American that feels strongly about helping veterans, it doesn't really matter what you do for a living, as long as you're willing to kind of help, because we'll find somebody. A lot of this is going to eventually be a lot more activity going on outside of our 8-acre farm in Horse Ranch rather than on it, because you're pot bound by physical constraints, right? But let's say you want to become a fireman in the greater Chicago area. You have no clue on how to do it. You're a 34-year-old Army veteran, and you say that's I'm trying to figure this out. Okay, what if I have somebody who's, you know, a retired Chicago fireman or two, and they would mentor that person, connect them with somebody that's training other guys to get ready for the test, the physical test, all the rest of it. See what I mean? It doesn't have to be just business or just the end to a job of our choosing. Mm-hmm. I've got a submarine commander who has taken woodworking on as a hobby to where he turned a 2-car garage into his own shop. And he's got a lot of high speed stuff, and he's making furniture and everything else. He contacted me and said, I'd love to come down to Florida on my dime and volunteer as an instructor. Gotcha. See, so yeah, it's kind of anybody and everybody that wants to help, and the veterans that think that they need something, at least they can ask the question.
Yeah.
And if, you know, we don't do veterans housing, but we know groups that do. We don't do scholarships for kids of veterans, but we know groups that do. And it takes like one or two phone calls. I can call probably three major veteran groups right now that we've connected with, and they know 20.
Right.
So yeah, everybody's got the same kind of point of view, you know, just pass it forward, help them out. And
yeah. And that's the great thing too about the veteran community is that everybody starts to know who the good people are, who are the people you might want to stay away from, and all that kind of stuff kind of bubbles to the surface. We have a good BS detector. I think we can start to figure out who's good, who's not.
Yeah.
And then, again, you may not be the guy who does all the things, but you know the people who do some of the things that people might be looking for, and you can point them in the right direction. And so, you know, at a minimum, you know, reach out to somebody who can help point you in the right direction for any of those things that you just mentioned, you know?
Yeah. I mean, our motto is believe in you. So basically it means, we understand that you focused on everybody else in your unit. You focused on the mission. You focused on God and country. And the longer you were in, the more you were focused and set up that way, right?
Yeah.
And then one day, because I did it, I got my retired ID card. I walked to my vehicle. I drove out the gate, and I'm like, who am I now?
Yeah.
Right. I went from being a SEAL, you know, executive commander, executive officer of a SEAL team, to just being Joe Schmo driving down the road, right? That's how it felt. And I knew I was going to try to get into the financial services industry, and I had an opening to go in, but you could get dropped during the 4 months of licensing training. If you fail at one of the licenses, they just let you go. And so it wasn't a for sure thing. And I had I had 5 kids. So I'm like, okay, I went from being like, just to say this, like hero to zero. You felt like I'm on top of the world. I have my self-esteem is in the right place. You know, I'm really good at what I do. And all of a sudden you're just a goofball driving around. So
right.
Part of what we try to tell veterans, and I've done this with other transition groups, is you have to humble yourself. And if possible, at least 6 to 8 months before you get out of the service, maybe even longer, you have to start investigating areas that you might be interested in, and do it seriously. Do it, I guess, honestly. Mm-hmm. I'll give an example. Navy commander comes into a company that I was a part of. I was a senior vice president, and he was assigned to me. And it's a great, he comes in, sits down, and we talk a little bit. And then he goes, "So where's my office going to be?" And I said, "Well, you're not going to have an office. You're going to be in a cubicle." And he says, "Well, you have an office." Now, he was a SEAL, so he knew me, and he was a commander, so he knew he was senior to me. But I'd been out for 6-7 years at that point. So it was irrelevant, right?
Right.
It was a whole, right. this wasn't the same pecking order. And I looked at him, I said, "Okay." And I knew him, you know, friendly enough. I said, "All right, I'll tell you what. I'll give you an office if you can tell me what this is." And I got up and I took a dry erase pen and I put EBITA, EBITA, on the board. And I put the thing back in the tray and I sat down. I said, "If you can explain what that is, I'll give you an office." And he goes, "Is this some kind of a trick?" And I said, "No, it's an acronym." And he goes, why does that matter?" I said, "Because that is what kills a company or makes a company thrive. So yeah. You're not ready for an office. You need to apprentice yourself to the business. You need to learn from the bottom up. Eventually, all your skills from the military will kick in at the appropriate time. If you don't know how to bake the bread, nobody's going to let you boss anybody around in the bakery. So you need to learn to bake the bread first." So, and then I'll say things to groups. I'll say, you know, I'll point to people and I say, "How many years was it before you were an accomplished fighter pilot? Or how many years was it before you were an accomplished whatever?" And they'll say 4 years, 5 years, whatever, before I was really on the top of my game. I said, "Okay, why would it take a week and a half for you stepping out of uniform? You think you're going to get a C-suite office or you're going to get some huge paycheck. And even if somebody gives it to you because they're patriotic, if you can't sustain value, they're going to have to ask you, you know, regretfully to leave someday," which happens a lot.
Yeah.
So just, I'll tell people that it's kind of like a scared straight presentation. I guess called, "Thank you for your service. Now what?" And that's kind of straight talk that they would get from us also, whether they're calling in, writing in, or actually showing up for what we're providing.
Right. And to your point, a lot of times people who, especially were in a senior leadership, you know, a senior NCO or, you know, high ranking officer position, getting out, they feel like they are owed that same level of role in whatever organization that they go into. But, you know, this company that you were just talking about, like, that wasn't the SEALs that, you know, where that person was qualified to be a leader of SEALs, they may not be qualified to be a leader of people in that particular organization, because it's a whole different culture. It's a whole different set of rules, it's a whole different job for crying out loud. Like, you just have totally different things that you are going to be expected to do. And you kind of have to learn that before you just kind of jump into that leadership position and make an ass of yourself. Right.
Makes perfect sense and logic when you explain it to them. It's like, why didn't I think of this already? I mean, obviously, if I want to own a restaurant, I don't really think about the restaurant business.
Right.
A person said that to me one time, and I said, "Well, why don't you just go in and talk to a restaurant owner and say you'd like to come in and work for free, like an intern, and you want to, you know, do 2 weeks the hostess stand, then you want to do 2 weeks waiting, bussing tables, then you want to do, you know, learn a little bit about being a waiter, then you want to do, you know, a month being a waiter, and then you want to go back and help in the kitchen. You want to offload, you know, food from the trucks when they come in, you know, whenever they come in. You want to see all these different things, because that's all part of the business of owning a restaurant."
Yeah.
It's just not sitting at the top saying, "I'm the owner of the restaurant," and suddenly you just know everything. It's the transition programs are out there, unfortunately, have it backwards. They try to take their current status, their current strength in all these different categories, and they try to convert it to a civilian term on a resume. You know,
yeah,
you managed $100 million budget. Okay, no, you didn't. You didn't actually manage a budget. You've never hired an accountant in your life. You don't know anything about GAAP. You don't know anything about this stuff. You were a bureaucrat and you had bureaucrats who were managing that for you. And you were just responsible and accountable for that structure. You weren't the, you weren't like a normal entrepreneur or business person.
Right.
And yet they tell them to do that. And then they go out and they shop themselves to people. And the people, maybe an HR person would look at it and go, but anybody that's worth their salt is going to say, oh, wow, this sucks. Cause I'm sure he's a good guy and all that. You should flip it on your head. Don't lead with all those things you're good at now. Lead with your humility and your willingness to learn. And you get into an organization, 95% of every one of the veterans that get into an organization, once they understand what's going on and start to contribute, they become force multipliers. They become, and any owner or bosses are like, holy crap, this guy's worth five people.
Yeah.
Right? But you can't just be the token veteran sitting there wondering what the hell's going on.
Right.
You have to learn a little bit about it first.
And you definitely can't be the guy who's sitting there with a pissy attitude because like, oh, I don't think I have the job that I deserve or anything like that. Like, again, humble yourself and learn the job, learn what you need to do. And there's a lot that goes into that. And once when you've learned that and you kind of have grounded yourself a bit into the organization, into the industry, whatever role it might be, I don't care what industry it is, then, like you said, then you start to, you know, see where you fit in and where you can really contribute and add some value to the organization. And that's when you're going to start moving up and you'll start exceeding probably your peers and things like that, who don't have the same experiences that you have, that, you know, your experience is valuable for sure, but you also need to figure out where you fit in the organization too. So,
and if it doesn't work out, try something else.
Yeah.
Unless you're dead, you always have time to adapt and learn and modify and evolve.
And that's one of the things that I think everybody, I don't care what you did in the military, we all have this ability to learn something. I mean, we all were broken down and built back up into, you know, the way the Army wants you or the Navy wants you or the Marine Corps, or, you know, whoever, you know, you were trained to do a particular job in the military. And maybe even more than one particular job in the military.
Yeah.
And there's advanced level training for all of those things. So you're able to learn. So why not learn, you know, this other job? You know, think of it just like another set of training. I got to go and learn this thing. And then I'll be able to go in and apply my skills, my full set of skills after I learn, you know, the basics of whatever it is that I'm getting into. Right.
Absolutely.
So this is great and definitely something I think is needed in the military, the veteran world. You know, folks getting out of the military, again, like you said, a few months, you know, 6-8 months, even longer, maybe even, you know, start considering what you want to be doing on your way out and start reaching out to people like you and getting involved with whatever that next step is. So you're not the guy who's driving off base on your last day, like you said you were, just kind of wondering, okay, what do I do now? And
yeah,
you know, that's a tough place to be, right?
The feeling I had, I'd actually forgotten it until I started helping with people that were doing transitions out of the military. And I kept hearing it over and over again. I go, shit, that's what happened to me. I had that same kind of hollow, also that false hero thing where I got to go face my family and pretend like I'm just as powerful as a breadwinner and as a leader of the family as I was 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, right. Right.
But you're not sure if you are. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff you got to mess. It's good in your head, but yeah, but the training thing is really important. And the longer you've been in the military, the more you expect it. And if you don't get it, you seek it yourself because you know, that's the key to success. That's the key to growth. That's the key to execution and excellence and performance. So when I floundered, when I got out in the first couple of months, I had a couple of low points. And then I thought, okay, I just got to find somebody that knows what the hell they're doing and listen to them. Yeah. And so I started calling all kinds of people in the company. There was a success magazine. I started calling guys in Texas. I was in Maryland. I was calling guys in Texas and all over the place. Hi, you don't know me. But I saw this article, so tell me about annuities. And every one of them helped. Every one of them gave their time. Every one of them gave me an insight. Sometimes it's terrible, but I've been in it too long. I can't get out, get into some other part of the business. But I did it because I was used to doing it. I was used to being in the military and either being fed really great training or being frustrated and creating my own source of information and insight.
And that's, again, that's what we need. We need more folks like you guys. And, you know, I think what you're doing is awesome. So I definitely, like I said, at the beginning of the episode, I definitely wanted to get you on to talk about what you guys are doing at Warriors Haven and, you know, all the, you know, great programs that you talked about, I think are definitely incredible. You're definitely going to be helping out quite a few people, you know, going in the future, but, you know, and we'll have links to all of your stuff on or in the show notes for this episode as well. So, you know, for any of the listeners who are interested in learning more, either how to volunteer to instruct folks or mentor people or want to get involved because you need the training yourself, you know, that just reach out and I'm sure you guys will be able to hook them up and get them set on the right path. So Marty, I'm really grateful that you were able to come on the show and tell us about what it is that you guys are doing and looking forward to see the great results that you guys are producing down the line, you know, as folks progress through your program. So thanks a lot for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, and it was good seeing you again.
Yeah, absolutely.